So there's an event happening this week, and Tiger Woods is in the field. So are guys like Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, Colin Morikawa, Tony Finau, Brad Faxon, Nelly Korda, the list goes on and on. The event is also being played at one of the top golf courses in the entire world. And one PGA Tour player even famously referred to this event as the first major of the year. But here's the rub. You'll never see it. It's not televised. There's no media tent set up. There's no reporters on site. This is not something that the public gets to view. What we're talking about is the Seminole Pro member. And on the member side, it's a literal who's who of the golf industry. And it also includes a number of very powerful billionaires and celebrities. And for one of our talking points and most important purposes here to talk about today, is that it also continues to show, Mike, the divide that's in golf. Because, very purposefully, no LIV golfers were invited to participate.
I hear that.
Okay, so that's sure. That could be kind of sounding like stirring the pot, whatever it may be. But I think more importantly, it just kind of proves, especially as we talk about some of the names on the influential side of who's in this event, it kind of shows you that there's still a very much a divide on the inside. Between who's let in and who's not.
I was just going to say, isn't it over with? Aren't these guys past it? Are they okay with letting DJ come back? Is he even, I think, I even heard he might even be a member there. I mean, it's either there or the Bears Club or so. There's a lot of golf in that area. Let's put it that way. And a lot of great clubs. But to not let any of the LIV guys in, where'd that come from?
It's very interesting. And we've got a little bit of information on that. But I think even going one deeper, you look at like Tiger Woods, for example. Mm-hmm. Tiger is paired with PGA of America CEO, Seth Waugh. Mm-hmm. And you think about Tiger's role on the player advisory board and the policy board and the PGA Tour, and him being one of now in the forefront in the leadership roles when it comes to this framework agreement and the merger and whether it's going to happen or not. And to me, it just kind of paints a picture of, well, looking from the outside in of like, are these guys really getting along? Is there really talks happening? Is there a coming together or is there a pushing apart? Hmm. And when I see something like this, where it almost just seems like a very exclusive who's who type of event, but you're excluding a lot of guys because of their affiliation with LIV, it just can't be a good sign for this framework agreement as far as I'm concerned.
No, it can't be. And again, like I just said, I don't know why. I thought they were past it. I think the big hurdle was like Brooks winning the PGA. Like after that moment, I felt like, okay, it's over. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I know they're still in talks. There's still an agreement in place or about to be made of something that's going to come up in weeks, right? But I mean, just going back to like the state of the game, I mean, I was even just over the weekend just looking at both leaderboards, completely different, and LIV had the better leaderboard. I'm not going to lie. It had more names. Mm-hmm. I feel like this event that we're talking about, the pro member, much better names.
Well, you know, I will say arguably this pro member has got better names than I would say almost every field of the year.
Yes, you know, without question.
Maybe exclusive of majors.
There's some names there you haven't even mentioned yet. Tom Brady. There's more celebrities on the on the member side, I guess. By the way, that's one event you and I are never going to play in.
Of course.
Imagine to be a member there. Never going to happen. And a pro, obviously.
And I want to talk about the club and how you get in, because this is something that also happens every year. So I think it's intriguing to just kind of hear and know about, because it's one of those like kind of like inside things that happens. And if there were cameras there, it would be probably the most watched event or one of the most watched events in the year.
No doubt.
But kind of like even diving back into that, you look at this list, and like Mike was saying, you've got it's a total of 90 pairings. It's a better ball format, 90 pairings. So what this is it's the members of the Seminole Club are paired up with pros. Now, you know, there's a lot of golf clubs out there that have member pros.
Yep.
And they don't look like this.
They don't look like this. Right.
They don't look like this. And it's just, like I said, it literally kind of goes through of a who's who. So you have, for example, you've got Tom Brady, as you mentioned. He's paired up with Tony Finau.
That's cool.
Right? I mean, any one of these is is better than watching the match.
Right. Right. I'm trying to get, like, definitely right about that. But who invites who here? The member invites the pro, right? So is Brady reaching out to Finau saying, hey, I need a partner? Is that how this
there's
works?
There's an obvious large degree of secrecy around this.
Of course,
this.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. It's not something that is posed as. I'm even surprised that the list leaked.
Yes.
To be honest with you.
When I first saw that.
When we saw the list, it made the huge rounds on social media because this club is, the way to describe Seminole, it's a lot like the way you would think of Augusta, but arguably even more private because it doesn't host events to the public. Now, there was something, I believe it held a Walker Cup. So there's been some televised or at least some publicized events there.
Yeah.
But unlike Augusta, which is under that microscope once a year, Seminole is not. But as far as getting into the club, it's very similar. It's basically you don't ask to get into the club. Right. They come find you and ask you. Like I said, it's a who's who. We'll go through some of those names in a second because we do have and we did see the list. But more about the club. I mean, it's a Donald Ross design. It's currently ranked according to, and everybody does their rankings different, but according to Golf Digest, I believe it's ranked number 10 in America. So it's consistently floating around the top 10. So incredible field, incredible location. Mm-hmm. No wonder that internally the pros refer to it as the first major of the year. But interestingly, it's not like it's just a, as Tiger would say, a hit and giggle.
Yeah, no.
Now, how they pair them up, I'm not sure. But there's undoubtedly some bragging rights that happen here. And we're talking about very powerful people who I'm sure want to win.
And gambling, I'm sure.
Oh,
I'm sure there's a lot of money.
Would not be surprised.
Yep.
But, for example, last year, JT and his partner won. There's a gross and net score.
Okay.
They shot a gross 63. It's a one-day event.
Yeah.
So it's one round. Gross 63. Three shots behind them was Rory McIlroy, who plays with his father.
Yep.
So I am confident that this is not a hit and giggle, that these guys are there to win this event.
Yep.
But it was Davis Love, the third, who he famously referred to the Seminole Pro member as the first major of the year. And again, just I'll put up on screen here the leaked kind of social media post of showing the lineup. I mean, you can, if you want, you can pause it if you're watching it and just kind of run through and look at some of these names. And I think as you see them, you just start to be like, they're everybody's there. You know, Cameron Young, Patrick Harrington.
Max Homa on that list?
I didn't see Max Homa, but I didn't dig through the entire thing.
Okay.
But some of the ones that hit my eye, Matt Fitzpatrick,
yep.
Ricky Fowler, like we said, Colin Morikawa. It just kind of just keeps going on and on. Now, there's going to be some guys, and we're going to talk about this later in the show. I want to talk about two things, kind of off topic, but kind of peripheral topics. The Monday finish of the Cognizant Classic, which a lot of people are really calling out the PGA Tour, making a huge mistake with what they did there.
Yep.
And because of that, there's going to be some of the guys that are going to have to withdraw from this field because they're not going to make it. And I also want to talk about Anthony Kim, just following up on last week about, you know, his tough start.
Tough, but maybe there's something there we can dissect.
Yeah.
You know, there might be something there. But real quick, though, this event, I have to ask his final question on it, the Seminole. If you're a pro and you're a member there, could you just bring another pro buddy? Like, isn't like JT a member there? Or someone, one of those guys has got to be a member there. Ricky Fowler, I think, is a member there.
It might be, but what I will say is that it's not necessarily always an amateur and a pro, because there's some of these guys who are of that caliber pro. Like, some of these guys are gamers.
Yeah.
No who are
doubt.
Members there.
Oh,
now,
no
whether
doubt.
They're a pro or not, so I don't really know. Again, there's a lot of secrecy. You don't walk up to the front door and ask what's going on here.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You guys weigh in. I'm curious how the member pro does work if you are a pro, like Ricky Fowler, but you're also the member. Can you just stack your team with JT and Ricky and go for it? I don't know. That'd
Look,
be kind of wild.
I think the reality of it is that this is an opportunity for players to rub elbows with very powerful people.
Yeah, definitely.
I.e. the members.
Yep.
And members to have the perk of being in the social economic status that they are,
yes.
However you want to say that, of playing with some of the top golfers.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So the one pairing that kind of stood out to me, though, is Tiger Woods. Like I said, he's paired with the PGA of America CEO, Seth Waugh. Now, Seth, and here's where, again, I wonder if this is an indication of the continued divide.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger, we've seen indications that he's still, and potentially, we have to, again, without hearing it directly from their mouth, we have to kind of surmise some of this. Potentially still not fully on board with the idea of the leagues coming together. And one of the things that I kind of refer to when I say that, and we talked about this recently on the podcast, was John Rahm saying that Tiger ghosted him after he went to Live.
Right.
Just kind of adding up these kind of outside looking in things of saying like there's still something there. Seth Waugh, he has been kind of a vocal, obvious critic of Liv since it started.
Of course.
Right? Yep. So, interestingly, though, he's the head of the PGA of America. The PGA of America, remember, is not the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. The PGA of America has not had the same hardline stance against Liv that the PGA Tour has.
Right.
What I mean by that is that Liv golfers have not been banned from the PGA Championship. Mm-hmm. They've not been banned from the Ryder Cup,
right,
which is another thing that the PGA of America runs. So you got to take some of these quotes, which we'll get into in a second, with a grain of salt, because, you know, it's like actions and words. The actions are that they continue to let them in. We even just saw, it just hit the press, Neiman is getting an invitation to the PGA Championship.
Right. It's two majors now.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, couple things though that have to be said if we're kind of wondering of what's going on here and what the thinking is. It was a New York Times interview that Seth Waugh had done last year, and he said, and this is basically talking about the PIF and Liv, and he said the PIF can fund it for as long as they want to, but no matter how much money you have, at some point burning it doesn't feel very good. I don't see that they are accomplishing much. Hmm. So he's basically saying they're throwing a lot of money at it, burning through it. It's not really having much of an effect. Now, I got to give him this and just say that these quotes were from at least a year ago.
Yep.
A lot of people's tones have changed. We talked about Rory's tone changing and some other ones. Mm-hmm. So I can't say 100% sure if this is still his feeling on it or not. But again, it was said. He also went on to say, I don't think division is good for the game. Hopefully it's good for those individuals that have made whatever decisions they have. He's speaking of the Live golfers, mm-hmm. But the game has moved on. It's amplified those who have stayed, and the ones who have left have largely disappeared from the landscape in terms of exposure perspective. So he's saying guys went Live, took the money and disappeared. Again, I think that a lot has changed in the last 12 months. There's a lot more visibility on Live than there was before. But if you're really being cynical for a second and you're thinking Tiger Woods and Seth are paired up, what's that conversation like for four hours?
Seriously.
Right? And is it pro-Live or anti-Live?
You know? You're right. You got to assume anti-Live, right? These guys are holding their stance.
Well, let's talk about the fact that there's no Live golfers in the field. Right. So, this is what it's been reported. And again, the secrecy around the event makes it very hard to state very clear facts.
Right.
We can only go based on what's reported. Now, there's definitely a bit of a culture on the insiders of leaking a little bit of information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've seen, because that's a lot of like the Live deals have been leaked before they've happened and things like that. So, the report is that Jimmy Dunn, he's a prominent investment banker. He's also the president of Seminole Golf Club.
Mm-hmm.
It's said that he was the one who ultimately made the call to exclude Live players from the event. So how true it is, it's hard to say. It could have been that there was nothing actually spoken of not including them, and it could have just been that the members didn't invite any Live golfers. If it truly is the setup, like you were saying,
right,
that you invite who you want to play with you.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. So it's hard. We can make guesses, educated guesses, because of the secrecy of the event.
Mm-hmm.
Golf's secret major.
Right.
You know? But the reality is, the way it's being reported is that they were actively excluded. Actively.
It's interesting. Like I said, I thought they were past it, man. I don't know. I would see Brooks in a field like that, or DJ, you know?
Well, the reason...
These Florida guys.
It makes me wonder, and why it's got my attention in a way, is because if you think about what's going on right now with the PGA Tour, and the PGA Tour is out there actively trying to recruit money. We saw recently the big investment that's coming, you know, from that the sports holding group that includes, you know, the guys who, you know, own Boston and stuff like that. you think about, you now have an event where it's coming together are the biggest and strongest voices for the PGA Tour, mm-hmm. some of the biggest voices in you know, golf industry, and some of the richest people running some of the biggest companies.
Yeah.
So those are all the people that are in competition effectively with what's going on with LIV.
Yeah.
So what I'm wondering is, some of these guys are there are undoubtedly in some way making some of the calls for the funding decisions that are happening, for the money that the PGA Tour is actively out there seeking.
Yeah.
The deals that they're going after.
It's, yeah, it's interesting to look at it because I thought originally that no LIV players are in the field is because they're all in Jeddah followed by Hong Kong. And they're just on the other side of the world this week, every single LIV player. But if you got an invite as DJ or Cam Smith or whatever, you're a Florida native, you know Seminole, you know the power of this event, would you kind of fly back across the world for it and before heading back to Hong Kong? Is it worth it for you? So my little speculation is just there's no LIV people there because they're just on the other side of the world. They're all on the other side of the world right now. I don't know.
And that's unfortunately the thing we're not going to get an answer to. Of the reasoning, because mm-hmm. I don't think anyone is going to, like I said, there's no press. There's no, these guys aren't going to, after or before they're around, have to sit down for a press conference and be asked the question.
Yeah, right.
Right? Why are they not here?
Right.
The most we can do is look at it, again, from the outside looking in, look at the list, see that there are, interestingly, not a single LIV guy there, and the fact that we're hearing like these reports that it was, you know, the decision was made to exclude them.
Yeah.
That's all we can work off of.
I know.
So unfortunately it will drive certain conspiracies, but I just wonder because now the clock is so ticking. We are we're weeks away
from the Masters.
Yes.
So,
and that's the new framework agreement deadline. And they can't do this to us forever.
Right.
They can't leave us hanging of what's going to happen. Eventually the decision has to be made and announced. Are they coming together? Or are they not?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, this is just one more indication that it doesn't look like they're coming together.
Yeah.
I think that the PGA Tour is going to continue to shop and find the sources of revenue elsewhere. If they can get the investors and they can compete, they're going to stay that way. But you brought up a good point. So you were watching both events this past weekend.
Yep.
Glancing at the leaderboards, what was your thought?
It was just more exciting on the LIV side because of the familiarity of the names, right? We talk about that, like no names on the Cognizant. Like you got great stories. If you're invested in the tour and you know the story of a Knapp with like how he was, what is a security guard last year to winning. And now Nick Dunlop, you know, he made a hole in one Dunlap, you know, I'm even messing up the names because they're still so new to me. You know what I mean? Like, but that's maybe the shift of the tour now. Maybe it's time for us to like, grasp these new names as our new Spieth, Thomas, McIlroys, and watch the majors and then go over and watch LIV. But I mean, you know, you and the family were at my house this weekend. We turned on the TV and we saw on YouTube TV, they were right next to each other.
Yeah.
LIV Jeddah or watched Cognizant Classic as my recommended TV watch.
Yeah.
So it was easy to navigate and I did watch both.
It's becoming much easier to watch LIV.
Yeah.
It definitely is. And look, I mean, certain aspects I'm flipping because I'm enjoying both. Mm-hmm. Like you said, Knapp. I mean, just on a side note, that kid is my golf swing spirit animal now. Yeah. Like I just want to replicate
buttery swing.
The ease of his swing and the power that he generates is incredible. But I would say that this is now, last week was one of the first times I'm starting to see that turn of the corner of where you can pound for pound say that LIV put up a bigger household name leaderboard. Or at least going in, like there were now, there were guys like Rory who just really didn't play well enough to be on that top of that leaderboard that's visible. And, you know, so there were certain guys, but it wasn't like it was like a true off field event on the PGA Tour. It wasn't like when we see, you know, the true like alternate fields.
Yes.
Where the guys who don't make it in the Masters are playing in another event. It wasn't like that. But it is seeing that the divide that we're seeing in the PGA Tour still with the signature events. When you have a non-signature event, because this is not, it may seem like a no-name event because of the new sponsor, but this was the Honda Classic.
Yeah.
For years and years.
For years.
It's just that Honda fell out and they brought in the Cognizant as the name. But it's not a no-name event.
It's not a no-name event. And at the end of the day, flipping back and forth between the two of them, you had beautiful courses, like aesthetically pleasing, water, palm trees, both Jeddah and Florida, you know? Mm-hmm. So the golf was great. You had great golf. You had some good quality shots. So it was good golf all around. It's just like, if you're looking for like that major feel, I think you were kind of landing on LIV and staying on LIV. They had the better weekend product, no doubt, as far as that leaderboard goes. It was fun to see guys like climb up the leaderboard. The one thing about LIV that I got to give them credit for is like, they just keep it moving. A guy hits a shot, you're on to the next guy. Then you're on to the next guy.
Well, we saw
on TV.
I think it was the first. If I wasn't, let me know in the comments, guys, if I'm wrong here. But I think it was the first time we saw a penalty for slow that? Play.
$250,000?
Effectively, because it was one stroke. One stroke.
Oh, it cost him that much because of the stroke.
The stroke on the leaderboard could have cost him that. So it was a one stroke penalty that was assessed because of slow play. Now, it's in LIV's rules that you have 40 seconds to play your shot. Unless you're the first guy to go in the group, then you have 10 extra seconds. And this was a 2 minutes, and they had already been warned and stuff like that. It's not something we haven't seen on the PGA Tour before. A lot of part of that, the broadcast and the way they keep it moving. But it's interesting. And I want to get into both events even more, because you have on the PGA Tour side, the way that the delay was handled and the fact that it's a Monday finish had fans calling it a clown show. Mm-hmm. Which is not, it's when you're in a competing product, that's not the look you want.
Yeah, right.
And then on the other side of the coin, really not the optics or the look that they would want, with LIV having Anthony Kim's, for all the height. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk about why I didn't really expect him to play super well.
Right.
But there was a curiosity, people tune in. But he really struggled, came in dead last. Mm-hmm. But I think more importantly to that, it kind of shows the monetary divide, because we'll talk about it after the break, but Anthony Kim still took home a significant payday for what he did.
Oh yeah.
So let's do a quick word from our sponsors. We'll come back and we'll talk about all that. So if you haven't checked out Titleist little mini series documentary called Finding Feel yet, now's the time to do it. Mm. I'll tell you what, I watched this thing and I even put this in my story on Instagram, because it's my immediate first thought that popped in my head after watching it. As I said, if you A, don't watch this and don't get chills, and B, don't want to just immediately run out, like run through a wall to play 18 holes, you are playing the wrong game. So, we had the great experience of getting fit for the T-Series irons last year. They've quickly become my favorite irons I've ever played. I love the feel to it. And it was really cool to see that kind of behind the scenes access that Titleist provided as part of this, of really showing what goes into it. Titleist comes out with new irons only every 2 years, because there's 2 years of research and development that go into it. And what we saw was a very unique aspect, whereas a lot of the discussion that goes into new clubs is a lot of distance and things like that.
Right.
Titleist tried to tackle really how do you quantify feel, because what they did is they started by asking so many golfers, like, what was one of the most important things? A lot of them said feel was so important.
Yep.
But okay, what is that? That's subjective. And I love it, because everybody from tour players to your regular everyday golfers, they ask them in this documentary, what is a pure iron shot? Explain like what that feels like. And it's like, everybody's like kind of like lost for words. Yeah. It's hard. It's different to everybody, but I won't spoil it for you. I want you guys to go out and check it out. I will say there's one part I thought was so crazy. They rented the only like public sound chamber. You ever see those crazy sound chambers? Mm-hmm. And they're hitting shots in there just with the headphones on, just listening.
Oh, that's
cool. Because feel, and the way feel is tied to sound.
Yep.
So it's not something you're going to want to miss. Go and check it out. You can view it on the Titleist YouTube channel right now. It's a quick watch. It's like 15 minutes. And like I said, just let me know in the comments if you're able to watch that and not just immediately want to play golf.
It gave you the feels.
I got all the feels from it. So go and check that out for sure.
All right, guys, and huge thanks to Ripstick. I mean, honestly, I have seen massive gains since using the Ripstick. I've been playing golf a lot lately in the sim here, getting ready to get out on the course, and just tee shots, speed, some of the swing and ball speed I haven't seen in a long time. And it's funny, because I joke, like, I'm gaining speed as this body ages, which is great. That's what we always get nervous about. As we get older, we're going to lose speed and we're just going to be hitting 200 yard drives off the tee. But that is no longer with speed training. And I love the Ripstick training, because it's 8 different weight combinations in one stick. So it's so easy to use. And their free app is my favorite thing. thing. The app provides that step-by-step, like a dummy can do it type of thing. It keeps you accountable. You only do it a few days a week. It actually locks you out so that you don't overtrain, which is very smart. And the whole team at Ripstick has thought of everything that went into this product. So you have to experience for yourself. Guys, it's not that much money. You could pick up a Ripstick. You can even get 20% off of the stick using our code Golficity. Just go check it out. Go to ripstick.com. Pick yourself up one. Go get those gains. All right, and the FootJoy Tempo series just launched today. It's funny, a lot of people have been asking us ever since we dropped that Cabot Citrus video on our main
channel. I've never gotten so many DMs about a hoodie.
Like, yo, where'd you get that hoodie? Where'd you get that hoodie? Well, it's called Tempo Series, and you got to listen to how genius this is, because this apparel was designed to keep you cool when it's hot out there, and but keep you warm when you're in the shade. So they figured it out, you know? Temperatures evolve out there. I mean, we tee off sometimes early. It's 45 degrees. It's 75 degrees by the ninth hole, right, and then maybe it's cooling down as we get. So instead of delayering and trying to figure out your life out there, just pick up some of the Tempo series. You're going to love it. And by the way, the styles, the colorway patterns, that sweet mint hoodie that we had, so cool, so flashy, unique, so thin, but so strong.
That's there's some days that it naturally progresses and gets warmer throughout the day and you delayer, but there's other, these transitional days where it just feels like it's going back and forth. You know, cold 1 minute, hot the next.
Like a Tanza type day.
Exactly. This is the perfect thing because it just keeps you right in that middle. I don't know how they did it. I honestly don't care. That's up to the smarter fabric engineers, but whatever they use in it, I wore it the entire, we had a long day at Cabot. I wore it all day.
Sun up to sundown.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Go check it out for yourself. FootJoy.com. Let's get back to it.
All right, so if you missed it Sunday, that final round, PGA Tour, Cognizant Classic, what happened was it was a very clear, there's no surprise here. It was a very clear forecast of the weather that was coming. It ended up, because of the way the PGA Tour handled it, users just took to Twitter or X or whatever. Well, forever we're going to be calling it X or Twitter. And just laced into the PGA Tour. Like, how do you do this? There's an easy solution to this. No, you know, who wants a Monday finish? And then even Smiley Kaufman, he said, he's very surprised groups weren't sent out in the morning off split tees and threesomes. Now looking at a Monday finish. So what happened was, they didn't adjust anything as far as that. Because what he's saying is you could have put threesomes together, put guys off on the front and the back, and gotten everybody done in time.
Right.
They set their groups off full well knowing the weather was coming. It was about 12:50 p.m. Eastern time that the rain came through, dumped a ton of rain. Play was suspended until 4:18, so 3.5 hours of suspension, and then they ran into darkness. Some of the guys lower on the leaderboard, like we talked about, Rory McIlroy, were able to finish their round, so he's able to get to.
He is able to. I was going to ask.
If you really want to get to conspiracy, it's like made sure he could get to this secret major. I can't go down that road. My mind doesn't work like that. But the reality was, we're going to come up to a Monday finish. So it's like, why? Why does this happen? The only thing I can kind of guess would be broadcast issues. I would imagine even broadcasting. I mean, I just can't imagine how good a number you pull on a broadcasting on a Monday versus, I guess, throwing it on early Sunday morning. If you had gotten these guys off front and back 7:15 a.m. and wrapped this thing up by noon. Is what's the problem? Is it a broadcast issue or is it just somebody fumbled the ball?
It's probably just a nightmare for everyone there. Travel plans, change of plans, all that stuff, right?
To go to Monday? Yeah.
To go to Monday, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, right. I'm sure these players don't love that.
But my question is, didn't they just eliminate a round on a recent event and cut it down to 3 days because of weather?
They did.
Now they want to push. Like, I don't understand. Can't they just cut
Pebble Beach? But the reason was with Pebble Beach, you had a scenario where it was unplayable for the entire day.
They weren't coming back Monday.
There was no, it was the weather. The weather that came in, that wind and stuff, it was just unplayable. This was a window of weather, and someone made that call. But I don't know. It was a tough way to go, and it was certainly not a popular take among players, fans, anybody.
I wonder what that did for Liv. For ratings, we haven't seen any ratings come out. I just wonder how many people really, between Anthony Kim and what happened over there in Palm Beach, did Liv really get a huge spike?
Yeah,
is this their best since Australia last year? I don't know. I'm curious to see as they unfold today.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And like I said, it's very tough to compare ratings because we don't get all the numbers, especially on Liv because of streaming.
True.
But if we see anything, we'll definitely let you know. But speaking of Liv, so you had Anthony Kim. comes back. The hype reel started rolling out. We talked largely about it. It was exciting. There's no denying it was exciting for all of us as golfers because of who he was in his prime and because of the mystique and allure around his disappearance. Mm-hmm. We all wanted to see it. What I would say was not terribly surprising was his poor performance.
No doubt. I didn't expect him to do well at all.
Right.
You know?
And that's the reality of this game. Like, as we've heard this before, like, you could be the best golfer in the world. Like, they need to keep competition skills sharp.
No doubt.
You know, and Anthony Kim, he did start to play a little bit better as it went on. And it could be just, again, getting that, knocking that rust off.
I was going to say, it's just maybe it's rust. Maybe he'll tighten it all up. Might take time.
Yeah.
But
I mean, he said himself, he said his scores don't reflect how he was playing. He felt like he was playing well.
He's got something that's clicking.
It didn't seem like a morale killer for him. Like, he's like, oh, that one and done, I'm out. This wasn't for me. But the reality is, like, there's golf and then there's competition golf. And this is why some of the guys will see, if they hadn't been playing in a couple of weeks, will, especially like before a big event, like a major, they'll get back in the field and they'll play some events, because you got to flex that competition muscle.
Yeah.
And that's clear that he didn't, you know, he hadn't had a chance to do that.
Right.
Because he's been playing. We don't even know how much he's been playing, because it's been such in secret. But
how much did he end up winning?
Here's the thing. And here's the thing that I say is the bad optics on the live side, but good and bad. You guys can make a case for this in the comments. Let's talk about that for a second, because he finished dead last, 16 over par. That's 11 shots behind the guy in 52nd place. It's 33 shots behind the winner. Way out of the field.
Way out.
He still took home $50,000.
Not bad.
So
3 days of work.
Yeah, there's and this is $50,000 for that event. In addition to, it's rumored that he's being paid about $10 million to come back and play for LIV.
Okay.
I understand both sides of this. So let's talk about both and just see what people think.
Mm-hmm.
The one side is that people are going to say, "See, this is how money's ruining the sport. If he played on the PGA Tour, where there's real competition," and I'm phrasing what people say. Right. Okay, don't come at me. I'm not telling you this is how I feel, but I'm telling you the two sides of this coin. People say if he was playing on the PGA Tour, he would have got cut. He wouldn't have made a penny.
Right.
That's competition. Okay, the other side of it, and this is something that we've heard from Phil Mickelson and things like that saying, if it's an entertainment product, he should make something for being there and entertaining fans, for the league as a whole, making money off of his appearance and his broadcast and publicizing that.
Mm-hmm.
He should not go home with nothing. Now, he's also not going home with nothing because they're paying him something,
of course,
to come and play for LIV. But that's the two sides of the coin. There's a side of, like, Phil Mickelson saying that, you know, if you're going to be guaranteed to be in the field, the sponsors are making something off of you, the broadcast, you should make something too.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the other side of saying, like, if it's pure competition, the way golf has always been played, you're dead last. You shouldn't get a penny. You wouldn't have made the cut.
It's always been, yep.
Right. Because these are no cut events. Which one do you guys think it is? You know, let us know in the comments. I'm more of the camp that I it's hard for me to see, and maybe it's just because I've been watching golf for so long one way, and maybe my mindset needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's hard to see a guy who comes so far out of the field and dead last still take home what I would call a significant paycheck, $50,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's far more than what a guy who made the cut at the Cognizant and came in last. He probably got like 18, 16 grand for like 64th place.
And if you think about it, you look at the whole field, he's finishing technically somewhere in the middle of the field that started.
Yeah.
Now, PGA Tour also, a lot of caveats to this. PGA Tour starts with a much bigger field.
Yeah.
Than LIV does.
It does.
So you go 100, and let's say you got 120 guys, and 60 of them get cut.
Right.
Right. So,
you know what I thought was the most interesting to come out of Anthony Kim and Jetta was him putting his foot down immediately, saying, "I will tell my story when I'm ready." Because he had to get in front of that, because, you know, that was the common question. You know, tell us about the injury, the insurance policy. They were probably coming at him. "I'll tell it when I'm ready." Maybe he's holding out for a massive payday to tell that story. Maybe he's waiting for a Netflix to come in and do the Anthony Kim story for X amount. Remember when Chris Rock got slapped by Will Smith? I'll tell my story when I'm paid. You know, he could be doing that too. This guy's been, I don't know if he's been known, has been speculated to take money and do things. I don't know, like this insurance policy that we still don't really know much about, yeah. Right?
But I still think, that's a very adept thing. It could be that he's holding out for money.
Could be.
I think that it's, he doesn't want to jeopardize whatever that agreement was.
But he has to have that story solidified, whether it's a lie or the truth. It's probably burned into his brain that I'm going to tell this story that I've either fabricated or is the truth.
Yes and no. There's a degree of plausible deniability that you could use and say, hey, Liv wasn't, I'm not playing for the PGA Tour. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if the agreement, again, if the stipulation of his career-ending industry is not to play for the PGA Tour, I think the lawyers would say the more you talk about it, the more you're putting yourself in a position where you could get yourself in trouble.
Yeah.
I don't know. All we can do, again, is guess on this.
Yep.
But I think eventually the story will come out. We're going to, it looks like, see Anthony Kim a few more times. He'll get a few more at-bats in this wild card position a few more times throughout the year. I think if there's only one thing that was disappointing for me personally from what I saw of it was that, and maybe there are moments that I missed. Again, I admittedly was, and if you guys let me know if there was something that happened that I missed, admittedly I was flipping between the two,
right,
you know, events, as you were saying on YouTube TV, which is where I watch it too. I think it was the allure of Anthony Kim was the big personality.
Yep.
The excitement. I didn't get that vibe this time. And maybe because he wasn't playing well.
Maybe.
So maybe that's why. Maybe that'll turn around. I don't know if he's just, as he aged, you know, he's much significantly older now than he was when we last saw him, competing. But there wasn't the same, in my take, the same degree of electricity around him.
Yeah, right.
He was just another kind of guy in the field.
Yeah. I think he was trying to keep, low key, just nerves. I don't want people watching me. I just want to do this thing. Whereas 10 years ago, 11 years, when he had the big belt buckles and he was winning, probably thriving on that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that level. What drew so many of us to him was the big personality.
Yeah.
And I didn't see a big personality from him. So it's hard to judge on one event, especially one event where somebody does not play particularly well. So anyway, lots going on. But if nothing else, this whole idea that we said, the Seminole Golf Club, this is something that happens every year.
Mm-hmm.
This secret major. And yeah. Boy, to have be a fly on the wall, to be a spectator there, man, what I wouldn't give to see this event go down. And maybe even more so what I wouldn't give to have a mic'd up moment and hear some of the discussions that were out there.
Yeah.
But for now, all we can do is guess at what those sound like.
Let's make a goal to do this show there next year.
I guess you can all have goals, but it doesn't mean very
whole lot.
It would not happen.
Right.
Anyway, that's everything we have for you guys. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you in the next one.